And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
Okay, good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time, and welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, taking it a little bit deeper, helping you reclaim that which you have always been and are. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Because you know, if you've been following me for some time, that each week or each or every other week, these broadcasts are dedicated to integrating spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships that we have with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or maybe you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit those websites. The first one is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, and the second website is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So I see people's comments in both places. So I just invite you to leave me your comments. And maybe if you'd like to call in and be part of the show or share your thoughts, you know, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. And just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, no worries. These broadcasts are podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you just want to go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, so you can just go on the website, bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, and you can select the show that piques your interest. And again, if you know, you don't want to go on the website, that's fine, because these shows are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon Music. And this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM out of New York on the weekends. So, Channel 3. And, you know, I just want to begin tonight just by saying that whenever I started this series, I'm now in my sixth year, I started out with the emphasis of I want to do something with the integration of spirituality and our mental health. Because one thing is for certain, I've not only seen through these broadcasts, but also throughout my clinical practice, is that there's a growing awareness and hunger for the need for people to not only integrate their mental health with their spirituality, but also to apply their spiritual growth within the context of relationships, especially healing from intergenerational traumatic experiences. And, you know, the benefit of healing from traumatic experiences is that we often dispel mental and emotional distortions of who we think we are. And we come a little bit closer to discovering the oneness of who we truly are as souls. How many of you out there are familiar with Edgar Cayce? He was always considered to be the father of holistic medicine, and actually he's the most documented psychic of the 20th century. He once wrote that whatever is truly valuable in thought or an activity and an experience is this sense of appreciation, this inner realization, and the understanding of the self, especially the self in relation to others and the self in relation to God. And meditation is a means to this end. And I couldn't agree more. Meditation and silent prayers have just been very sweet to me, just sitting in that silence and allowing my soul to communicate with the soul of God. And echoing this, you've heard me talk about Dr. Harold Koenig. He's a gentleman that I met probably about over 15, maybe even 20 years ago, who is currently the director of the Center of Spirituality and Theology and Health in North Carolina. And he also notes that a person's religious and spiritual beliefs and practices, well, these are important resources for coping, especially coping with illness. And there has been much research in this area, and he has done certainly just volumes and volumes of research in this area that really demonstrates a connection between our beliefs and our sense of well-being, such as what positive beliefs do we hold? Where do we find a sense of comfort? Where do we find that inner strength gained from our religion or spirituality? And where and when and how we use deeper meditation and contemplative prayer? And that's just to name a few. Because his research really highlighted the belief that improving your spiritual health may not cure an illness, but it may help your overall well-being, especially when you feel a higher sense of purpose or peace and hope and meaning. Or, you know, you may experience having better confidence or improved self-esteem and self-control. So there's just a handful of just the benefits, the many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental and spiritual health. And this is exactly where I come in, because I have always had a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find the courage to reclaim that which has always been in them, especially who they always have been and who they are. Because you've heard me say this before, I have a very solid belief that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life, especially in terms of our giftedness and our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, so on and so forth. And how we live our giftedness, let's just say, is in and through various relationships. And this aspect of our giftedness and skills and talents and strengths and character traits are very important when considering who we are. Because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits, so forth, no two people express them in the same way. So in other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. Now, yeah, people can try to imitate how we do things, but nobody, nobody can duplicate us. Because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to long time ago as hachaetas, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. Or as I, you know, try to explain it to kids, like, look, kids, you know, we all have a thumbprint. You know, it's something that we all have in common. We all have, you know, just our being. But because no two thumbprints are alike, you know, you have thisness, a uniqueness to you, so that whatever your gifts are in, or your skills, or your talents, or your strengths, and your personality, is not going to be the same. So you could do similar things, like say you're going to play soccer or football or something, but you're going to do it according to your thisness. Well, we adults also need to understand that, because we could be, you know, two people, three people, if you're working on a team, you know, no two people are going to complete a task, you know, the same way. But how do we encourage others to live according to their thisness without rushing to judgment or without ridiculing them for being different? And this is exactly, you know, the importance and having this realization of who we truly are. It is very vital. because the author of the best-selling book, The Alchemist, Paulo Coelho, says that the energy of hate will take you nowhere, but the energy of forgiveness, which manifests through love, can change your life for the better. So, as I stated, that if you'd like to call in and be part of the show, again, that number is 888-627-6008. And as I said, I'll be taking your calls after the break because I would like to hear what's on your heart and mind regarding tonight's show. It's entitled Krishna's Feast, The True Feeling of Oneness. Well, as the story goes, and this story was told to me a long time ago by one of my Hindi friends, they said, as the story goes, one day Krishna wanted to give a feast. No problem. All the ministers were invited, but he had not invited his sweetheart, Radha. And the prime minister was disturbed by this, and he urged him to send her an invitation. But Krishna would not listen to him, and he said, no. And yet the prime minister, he didn't really listen to Krishna, and he went to Radha to inform her of the feast, which Krishna was about to give. And Radha said to him, when you have a feast, you send invitations to your friends, but you don't send an invitation to yourself, do you? I know that Krishna is to have a feast because we are one. Oneness. That is the theme for tonight. And we often talk about this phenomenon of oneness as a punchline of a joke, such as asking a hot dog vendor to make us one with everything. And as we're standing there being very clever with ourselves, you know, if the vendor is aware of who he or she truly is, he or she will simply reply, listen, buddy, I can't make you one with everything. Because you are already one with everything, you just don't realize it yet. You see, oneness has to do more with being than something to obtain. And oneness and connectedness are major teachings from both, can be found both in the Bible and the Upanishads regarding who we are as authentic selves. We are connected to one another and all things, because everyone and everything comes from the Creator, or, as my Hindi friends say, Supreme Consciousness. Well, my Hindu friends and I love to get together, sit around, talk about oneness. We check in with each other, and, you know, how you doing? And, you know, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? You know, we encourage one another spiritually. But we love to sit and talk about oneness. It's something that just, it's fascinating because it's eternal. However, there are times when the subject of sin comes up. Now, from my Western Christian upbringing, I was always taught, and still believe, that our sin separates us from God, and that Christ had come to restore that separation through his death and resurrection. And yet, ironically, yes, my friends believe that, but they have also helped me expand my understanding and theirs of oneness, sin, and separation. Because you see, while it's true that sin separates us from God, it's our unawareness, shall we say, of being one with God already that causes us to sin against God and others. In other words, let's go back to the hot dog vendor. I can't make you one with anything. You already are. You just don't realize it. And so it's out of this ignorance of who we are or who we think we are causes us to sin against God and others. Because if we were truly realizing that we are one with God, that we're one with everyone, we are one with everything, would we treat one another the same as we have in the past? Or would there be more, let's say, respect or gratitude and unconditional love? Well, again, all in all, what we think, what we say, and what we do to others will echo back to us just as it went out from us. I mean, that's a fact. That is a fact throughout life. You know, call it karma or what goes around comes around, you know, whatever. You reap what you sow. It's a fact. What we do to others will echo back to us just as it went out from us. Well, yesterday, millions observed the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, which the United Nations General Assembly designates every year on January 27, which marks the anniversary of the liberation of the concentration camps of Auschwitz and Birkenau. Now, this day is a time to remember the 6 million Jewish victims of the Holocaust, and let's also not forget the millions of other victims from various backgrounds, ethnicities, and religions of Nazi persecution. And at numerous Holocaust memorial museums and other commemoration sites, visitors would come and they could read the names of Holocaust victims. They could take turns doing that. And they light candles, and they pray for them, they pray for the families, and they learn about the Holocaust and its microaggressions of contempt and hate that continue to this day. And it's certainly an inward journey, as we are compelled to examine our own consciousness, our own hearts. Now, personally, I visited the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., and the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. Very, very similar. But at the beginning of the Holocaust Museum tour in Washington, D.C., you are given a passport with a picture of an individual who was held at one of the concentration camps. And I think this is genius because you put a face with a name and a story. And I remember walking through the three levels of just wall-to-wall stories and newspaper clippings and headlines and pictures and political speeches and videos of the inhumane experiments that occurred during 1939 through 1945 in Nazi Germany, maybe even before 1939. In fact, you can probably trace all the way back to 1933. And it could be quite emotionally overwhelming. Yet the part of walking through that Holocaust museum, the part that really tied my stomach in knots, was when I came to a large room that was filled with mounds and mounds and mounds of shoes of the exterminated people. They were piled high on both sides of the room that when you had to walk through. And there was fans going, there was ventilation, but you can still smell the shoes, the leather, and how, you know, some, if you look really close, were stained with blood. And I saw many people staring at the shoes, as I was staring at the shoes, and weeping, because for them, it finally hit home. Every pair of shoes was a person. And yes, you know, there was stories and newspaper headlines and clippings and pictures and videos and all this stuff. But when you look at a pair of shoes and realize that there was a person who wore those, I remember saying to myself, you know, I wonder what stories these shoes could tell. Not just how in how the person who owned them died, excuse me, but rather, how did that person live? And, you know, behind every pair of shoes, there is a person. And behind every person, there's a story waiting to be told. And since there's a story waiting to be told, it's worth listening to for the nuggets of wisdom it contains. You know, in general, excuse me there for a second, a big frog in my throat. In general, you know, I've had countless conversations with people who wrestle with whether or not it's a good thing to mark the anniversaries of tragedies. You know, marking the anniversaries with all kinds of moments of silence and rituals and ceremonies, then in a day or two, go back to the way things were before. Well, that might be the easiest thing to do, but it certainly does not allow the transformational nature of historical memories to permeate our beingness. So why do we need to remember the past? Well, for one, as stated by the American philosopher George Santayana, that those who cannot remember the past are condemned to forever repeat it. And he wrote this in his work, The Life of Reason, Reason and Common Sense. Now, many people believe, you know, this quote, you know, those who cannot remember the past are forever doomed to repeat it. They often attribute it to Winston Churchill, who actually quoted Santayana at the beginning of England's involvement in World War II. And this sentiment is basically saying to us that we cannot afford to simply move on and forget. Because if we do this, sure enough, those destructive patterns will repeat themselves. So why is it easier to want to forget and move on with our lives without taking a long look at ourselves? Well, because when we stop and we take a long, hard look at ourselves and we ask very uncomfortable questions of ourselves, we just might realize that at our core, we have yet to realize who we are. Which brings us back to the subject of oneness and connectedness. Now, when you think about it, being aware of our oneness as souls is the eternal basis of all morality, that you and I are not only brothers and sisters, as it were, but that you and I and everyone that's come before us and everyone that's going to come after us are really one. Remember, the soul does not have a gender. The soul doesn't have an age, and certainly the soul does not have a form. And therefore, remembering who we are then is the motivation, I believe, for all ethics and all spirituality. In other words, oneness is the basic teaching of non-duality, or one without the second, as it were. So oneness means having this awareness that you and I are one. And moreover, we may appear to be two different individuals, two separate bodies. But first and foremost, we're not the body. We're a soul. So why then do we have a body? Well, hopefully, it helps us to remember who we are, that there's more to us than what we have become so far. And it helps us learn to live as souls in relation to one another. We look at the body, we look at what people do and so forth, and where they live and the cultures, and many people are unnerved by that diversity. But that's our greatest strength. Our strength comes in the diversity of how we live out this unity and this oneness of souls. Well, in the Upanishads, which I found out recently that in Sanskrit means sitting near a teacher. I love that. The Upanishads, translated as sitting near a teacher. There is this understanding that the universe is interconnected and that all beings are manifestations of the same divine presence. And the idea that, let's say, liberation or moksha in Sanskrit comes from recognizing this oneness and transcending the illusion of duality. And you know, the Bible also has well over 100 passages that highlight this oneness, this connectedness, this unity. You know, for example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17, the author writes, "But he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him." And then there's John 14, verse 20. That in that day you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. And that's just two random passages. Like I said, there's well over 100 passages that really highlight oneness and connectedness and unity. Well, ironically, I came across an old Psychology Today article. I think it was back in like October of 2020. A Dr. Michael Hogan, he wrote in his article, The Experience of Oneness, that there are several key aspects to the importance of oneness. There's, for example, the emotional and psychological well-being, because he says that a sense of oneness is linked to a greater life satisfaction and a feeling of being connected to a higher, more positive state of mind. But, you know, perhaps the most vital aspect of realizing our oneness with all people and all things is that it fosters empathy and deep interpersonal connections. Oneness is essential for empathy. And just a basic definition, empathy, you know, is that ability that we have to be able to understand and to share and experience the emotions and the thoughts and the perspectives of another person. I mean, how many times have you heard the expression, walking a mile in another person's shoes? That's empathy. And empathy is fundamental when it comes to, let's say, another example, let's say active listening to a friend. Okay, let's just say that your friend is upset about a work project that failed miserably. Now, instead of offering quick solutions or pointing your finger, you simply take a breath, you focus, and then you say, I'm sorry that this happened, but tell me more about what happened. You know, and it shows that you're present and that you're hearing their frustration, not just focusing on the problem. And another example of empathy is supporting somebody through their grief. You know, after a loss, you sit with somebody, not necessarily talking, but just being there. Perhaps if you need to say something, maybe you say, I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry for your suffering. I'll sit with you. And that's it. Allow your silence to be that offering presence and comfort, knowing that they're not alone, knowing that you cannot change the circumstances, but you're there for them. You bear witness to their grief. Well, hopefully by now you can guess that I'm a lover of books. I like all of my books, but there are a few that I consider life-changing. Because back in the day, there was a book I became familiar with in graduate school, and it was called Lament for a Son. Lament for a Son by the theologian Nicholas Waltersdorf. Good German theologian there. And the author is grieving for his 25-year-old son who died while climbing a mountain. And this book is his intimate account of his thoughts and feelings and struggles with his faith, struggles with his son's life, and struggles with his son's tragic and untimely death. And one of the more memorable passages in this book comes as Waltersdorf writes, "Each death is as unique as each life, and the solitude of suffering which accompanies that uniqueness. We say, I know how you're feeling, but really, we don't. I shall look at the world through tears. Perhaps I shall see things that, dried-eyed, I couldn't see. Nothing fills the void of his absence. My son is gone. Only a hole remains, a void, a gap, never to be filled. But please, don't say it's not so bad, because it is. To me, death is awful. It's demonic. And to comfort me, you have to come close. Come sit beside me on my mourner's bench." See, that's empathy. That's empathy. Yes, indeed, to comfort another at a time of loss is to come closer to them. And we must come close and acknowledge not only the shared human experience, but also realize that we share something far greater that exceeds the limits of this world, that we are souls connected to one another. Because unlike sympathy, which often involves feeling for someone from a distance, empathy involves feeling with them in a very, very close proximity. It requires suspending judgment and recognizing other people's emotions, which helps connect with their experiences. And it certainly provides that mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual support. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on these matters. So if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am your host, Dr. James Happ. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about oneness, as the Upanishads hold that the universe is interconnected and that all beings are manifestations of the same divine essence. And the idea that liberation, or what is called moksha, comes from recognizing this oneness and transcending the illusion of duality. And this idea of oneness is not exclusive to the Upanishads, because it's also found in the Bible and in other writings throughout the world. It's just something that I don't know how that message gets lost. But when you realize oneness, it changes your world. It changes who you are. So how do we recognize oneness when we experience it? How do we become aware? Like, this is who we truly are. Our souls have this oneness, this connectedness, this unity with all people and all things. Well, we certainly don't become aware of oneness by reading a book or listening to another person's stories. Trust me, it doesn't work that way. Instead, we know oneness deep in our core, our soul, when we have that direct encounter with God, who shows us that it is through God that all things and all beings are manifestations of the same divine presence. And when we have this direct encounter of God in our lives, we go from, well, I hope there's a God, to knowing that we know, that we know, that we know God has known us and loved us for all eternity. We have that assurance deep in our core that resonates and that points to and bears witness that, yeah, this is who we are. And where and with whom oneness shows up in our daily lives is the development of empathy. Because yes, we're here on earth and like we're souls, we're eternal, we are, you know, have this oneness, but how do we live this out? What does it look like on a daily basis? Well, it begins with, again, how do we develop empathy? See, again, empathy is this ability we have to understand and share another person's feelings. But interestingly enough, it is also a vital aspect of emotional intelligence, which, if you've ever read the book, you know, according to Daniel Goleman, who wrote the book Emotional Intelligence, he writes that empathy helps build relationships and improves communication, and it fosters an understanding of everyone, all things, all people. And yet being empathetic requires more than just saying, I'm sorry, even though that expression is often a go-to for many people. Instead, empathy involves active listening and understanding another person's emotions and responding with that care and compassion. Now, for empathy to really foster healing and grace in another person's life, you must not jump to conclusions. And above all, suspend all your judgment. The minute we judge another, we disconnect from oneness and we bring judgment on ourselves. Let me say that again. The minute we judge another person, we disconnect from oneness. And we bring that judgment on ourselves. Remember, wasn't it Jesus who says, you know, judge not, lest you be judged? Again, there's karma. What goes around comes around. We reap what we sow, and so on and so forth. But I like, you know, how St. Francis of Assisi really put it in his prayer. You know, because he writes, or in prayer, he says that, Lord, make me an instrument. Make me an instrument of your peace. And where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, let me sow pardon. Where there is doubt, may there be faith. And where there is despair, let it be hope. And where there is darkness, let me be light. And where there is sadness, let me be joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, and to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, and it is in pardoning that we are pardoned. Again, here is oneness lived out in empathy for all. And this was exactly, again, as I read from the theologian Nicholas Waltersdorf, that is what he's saying as he's really struggling, you know, as he wrote that book, Lament for a Son, really struggling in his faith. He said it was just, he never felt anything like it. He was literally shattered, and he had to rebuild his faith and philosophical systems that was just shattered by an untimely and tragic death of his son. Well, here's another way to understand oneness in the, let's say, the so-called randomness of life. How many of us have ever bumped into another person by accident? Come on, we've all done it. You know, we're out running errands, simply going about our business, or, you know, they were going about theirs, and we bump into another person. Or maybe we're trying to get through a large crowd, and our clothes gently brush against another person. I mean, most of the time, we wouldn't think twice about it. Or maybe we should just respond, you know, with something polite like, oh, excuse me, I am so, so sorry. Now, is there anything that would make us believe that running into another person was nothing more than a chance encounter. Maybe. But what if running into another person was a moment that was supposed to happen all along? Okay? What if running into another person just couldn't be helped? Or maybe, let's go with the benefit of hindsight here, that we realize that there was a deeper lesson that we needed to learn. Yet you see, while we are busy trying to get to where we need to go, and then we complain about bumping into somebody because, it's going to take more time now, we might have missed something more important that needed our attention that day. Hello, oneness. Hello, connectedness. Hello, unity. See, this sheds a different light on the subject, doesn't it? In fact, the lessons we ask to be shown and learn often come through the most unlikely times, the most unlikely places, and certainly the most unlikely people. God answers those prayers. Lord, show me. Okay, here comes the lessons. Unlikely time, unlikely place, and an unlikely person. And, you know, this aspect is something I've come to appreciate every time I'm out and about, okay? Now, before I leave, I typically offer up a little prayer, and I just ask, you know, to allow me to meet someone whom I need to talk to today, or somebody who needs to talk to me. And I tell you, this from experience, this makes running errands and completing tasks more meaningful. Because when you run into another person in a store, you realize that in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't so much that you needed to buy eggs or whatever, you know, or earlier this weekend, shovels, because we had some like major snowstorm. But at any point, it's not about those things. But perhaps the real reason you went to the store in the first place was that you needed to talk to that specific person. Or again, maybe they needed to talk to you. And that, you know, bumping into somebody turned out to be something interesting. See, we have many examples of these so-called chance encounters, which really make it worth paying attention to, you know, what's important in our lives at any given moment, as well as understanding how much we encounter oneness already. And again, perhaps we're just simply not aware of it. Well, I'm bringing up this phenomenon because recently I watched again the 2023 movie Past Lives. Now, for those of you who haven't seen it, that's a recommendation. You need to watch it. It's a Korean movie about an ongoing relationship between a man and a woman at various stages in their lives. You know, from childhood through later adolescence to middle adulthood. And throughout this movie, this Korean phrase keeps popping up in various situations. In-yeon. I-N, and then capital Y-E-O-N. In-yeon. Which is interpreted as two people having a special connection, which is often described as having a fate or a destiny. But you know, there's also a deeper meaning to this phrase, in-yeon. It's actually grounded in a Buddhist philosophy, and it carries the wisdom of a connection shared by two people, which just happens to be the result of their actions and relationships in previous lives. And this connection is not necessarily a romantic one that we often see in other movies. You know, just two people on the screen bump into each other and then, oh, look, we're dating. Now, instead, think of in-yeon as being more of a linking of souls across lifetimes. Sounds like oneness to me. Or as the main character, Nora, puts it, in-yeon can also mean that if two strangers walk by one another and their clothes actually touch, well, then there must have been something between them in a previous encounter. Again, sounds like oneness to me. Well, actually, I'm a big fan of Forrest Gump. So I like the Forrest Gump analogy where he says, "Now I don't know if each of us have a destiny or if we're all just floating around accidental-like on a breeze, but I think maybe it's both. Maybe both are happening at the same time." You never know. But again, that's the theme that's carried throughout that movie. Now, whether or not you believe in reincarnation or destiny or fate, I just want us to focus on the people in our lives whom we see day in and day out, especially the people whom we don't see, who work behind the scenes, that are often referred to as the invisible people, as it were, whom we pass by each and every day, but we never stop and take notice. Now, do we have a connection with them? Do we ever consider ourselves one with them? Well, just like the conversation with the hot dog vendor, I can't make you one with everything. In fact, nobody can make you anything. You already are one with everything and everyone. You just haven't realized it yet. So, of course, we have a connection. There is oneness, especially with the people who work behind the scenes, or the ones that society would call invisible. There is a connection there. There is unity there. There is oneness. And ironically, we stop and we pay attention, or we have a conversation, we just might realize that those are the people who hold a mirror up to us and show us exactly what's in our hearts, and hopefully vice versa with them. Oneness. Well, how many of us perceive ourselves as lacking something that we already possess? Again, can't make you one with anything because you already are. How many of us fail to see ourselves for who we truly are, let alone we continue to search for that person we truly are and are becoming? I mean, what gets in the way of that? What's blocking our vision? What is it from, stopping us from having that direct encounter with God to realize our oneness? Well, to be quite honest, when we resist the truth that we are one with all people and lack empathy, we will sooner or later be caught up in our self-inflicted emotional and psychological wounds, because we're acting out of our ignorance of who we are at our core. Think about it this way. What if, we think that we say something harmful or we do something harmful, that we're going to get away with it, that it will never come back to us? Well, whether the thought or the word or the action, it does. Every negative thought, everything negative we say, every negative thing we do comes back to us, often reinforcing the wounded parts of ourselves. So again, let's return to the movie, The Past Lives, and the Korean expression in yon. It certainly demonstrates that two people have a special connection. Again, often described as a fate or a destiny. Okay. So again, when we think about our wounded parts of ourselves, our woundedness, everything we think and say and do is energy. And unless we transform that energy first in healing ourselves by healing our own wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly how it went out from us. But the beauty of it is, it's not just the negative thoughts and words and deeds. It's also the positive, life-giving thoughts and words and deeds comes back to us to really bless us, to really hopefully help us understand this oneness. Now, up to this point, I've been talking about oneness in terms of human relationships. But we also have oneness with all things, especially the land. And whenever there is a soul disconnect, let's just say, the land doesn't forget. The land indeed remembers. The souls and souls that have trekked the lands for countless generations, And you talk about oneness, that those who have come before us, that the air they breathe is the same air we breathe. The same water they drank, it's the same water we drink. The same mountains that they climb for some psycho-spiritual renewal, we have the opportunity to climb this day. Because these literal and spiritual paths have been blazed for us to follow. And our imprint does not go unnoticed. As we walk in the footprints of our ancestors and relations, as a great cloud of witnesses, they carefully observe our attitudes and our actions. Yeah, the land remembers through the countless violence and aggressions throughout history, which blood has stained, and however that was communicated. And you know, ironically, even the blood of those who have laid slain cries out from the land, as according to Genesis, which is imprinted with the horrors of genocide and desolation. You know, we may attempt to forget about these tragedies, like the Holocaust, but there is no way we can romanticize the harsh reminders of a depraved human interaction. So, to put it another way, it ought to be glaringly obvious that the way we treat our environmental resources and animals is a direct reflection of our attitudes and behaviors towards ourselves and each other. In fact, despite all of our searching for the psycho-spiritual wholeness, we don't necessarily possess such wisdom because we don't understand how we are spiritually and emotionally fragmented. And yet, it is from this understanding that we have this opportunity to recognize right before us, to be able to heal this fragmented relationship with ourselves and others and the land, and reclaim the awareness of oneness, of who we have always been. And it is through this that the land truly remembers. However, the echoes of pain and suffering still tell us that the stories need to be told. Or as one Lakota man put it, "I often listen to the screams of the wounded and the dying carried on the wind across the prairie, blood spilled on the ground. We forget about these things, but the trees, they remember. The rocks, they remember. And the earth, it remembers. They remember when we forget, because the story is forever imprinted on this land. And if we listen, they will guide us, give us visions, and tell us stories. Past, present, and future all touch one another. Time does not exist. For spirits, time certainly does not exist. But can you hear them? Can you hear their cries?" I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And remember that, we cannot be one. We cannot be made to be one with everything. It's something that we already are. So again, my prayer is that you would reach out, that you would earnestly strive to be fully aware of this oneness of which you already are, as well as what needs to be healed in you, so that more of that realization of oneness can really come up and come out. Well, everybody, until next time, be safe out there. Behave yourselves and, take your time with all this weather that's going on. Okay? All right, everybody. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on PBS Radio TV.